Lifestyle.
You'll forgive me if I don't stay around to watch. I just can't cope with the freaky stuff.
We have to stop this, but that was a lot of fun for me. Welcome to the New Flesh Podcast, a podcast about horror movies and all things tangentially related to horror movies, and the horror lifestyle, which this week includes Stephen Sondheim's Send in the Clowns from the musical, what is it, From a Little Music Night? I don't know what that even is.
A little night music.
A little night music.
What, a little music.
What if this is
nice,
how
though.
It came out that I was dyslexic? It's not. I'm not. I just can't read good. Welcome to the New Flesh, everybody. Jesse had just like a 5-minute delay, which is why you now have that song. I had some extra time to sit here and ponder what I could do to talk about Terrifier 2 and Terrifier yet again, because that's what's happening this week. No, we're not ready to do Hellraiser.
Why would anyone even ask that?
I can't believe that people keep asking, suggesting that we're not ready to do the Hellraiser franchise. We're so ready. I've watched all the commentaries. I've done the documentaries. I've read the books. I don't even have books, but let's pretend like I've read the books. We're so ready. But Jesse decided to roll out. I don't know if harassing is the right word. I've been antagonizing Jesse. I've been mocking Jesse. I feel like Jesse sees everything in theaters. He even rolled out for the latest Crunchyroll anime release.
That's right.
But Jesse had not seen Terrifier 2 yet, so because it's still thriving in theaters in weeks, what is it, 7 or something, I threw it out there that it's still playing, and he made it work. And Jesse has seen, not only has Jesse seen Terrifier 2, and he's seen it in an AMC theater, which is something I cannot say I've done, he also watched the original Terrifier beforehand, like any good scholar of Art the Clown would. I'm excited to talk about it again. This is my third time talking about it, I feel like, because I definitely, Joe and I talked about it in the past, Joe and I talked about it in the more recent past, And here we are talking about Terrifier yet again. But we had to. I didn't want Jesse's bold sacrifice to go unnoticed. I had to justify forcing him to sit through what has to be, Jesse, correct me if I'm wrong, that's about 4 hours of Art the Clown shenanigans that you had to endure.
Yes. Yes, that was about 4 hours of art. Yes.
Ooh, what a! I like the way you put that. Jesse, is Terrifier art? The clown?
It is by day. Yeah, by day. Yeah. They've got a failsafe there. They can always say they've made art because Art the Clown is there. There's no arguing with it.
There's no arguing. So thank you for seeing it. I'm glad you did. I was delighted to see. I don't want to spoil anything for this episode, but I was delighted to see that your letterbox log did not, you know, you did not load this experience, and that is enough for me to be satisfied.
Yeah, I will talk about it, but I was not in agony sitting there by myself, not by myself, with three other weird loners. Dotted throughout the AMC theater.
I would love to see a study that shows the how many tickets bought to the Terrifier 2 were solo versus like a couple. I bet it's like 80-20.
I was also confused because like I did the little scan around the theater trying not to look like a weirdo, but just doing a quick scan like who else is here. And I said this on Twitter, there was like a lady by herself with a Mountain Dew, and I was like, I wanted to be like, hats off to you, but I didn't want to make anyone weirded out by talking to anyone in the theater showing Terrifier 2.
Yeah, the vibe is like, don't look at me, don't speak to me, keep your eyes focused on the screen, please.
Yeah, and then there was, I don't know if it was the same girl or if it was someone else, but I looked around and I got up to leave after, during the long Q&A that they appended to the movie after the credits. I stayed for a little bit of it and then had to leave. I've been in the theater for a long time.
Yeah, and cool then the 3 hours me, they were, probably all in yeah, with the yeah, previews this, yeah, and the Q&A
stuff. Yeah, exactly. It was a big chunk of my day. And in the row behind me, there was what seemed like a couple. It was like a guy and a lady, but I don't know if either of them were the ones who were there before, or if they just ducked in, or if they just ducked in after the movie started and I didn't notice, or if they were two people who were already in the theater who got together during Terrifier 2, maybe? Who knows? I feel like they were also both masked, which I was, but I was... Well, no, you know what? I wasn't, because there weren't that many people in the theater. I took my mask off. And they were both wearing masks, which made me feel like maybe they weren't... didn't know each other, but they were sitting with each other. I don't know.
You know,
it was
what?
Very confusing.
I hear it's a thing kids are doing now on the dating apps. They're like meeting up and seeing if they could really hack it by doing like a speed run of a relationship and all the hardships by going right to seeing Terrifier 2 together on the first date.
That's what I like to imagine. I like to imagine they even sat apart and then met up after to see, okay, are we both compatible with this movie and Art the Clown? In a thruple with Art the Clown.
Oh, man. Can you imagine the hijinks you guys would get into? So I am, you know, I've talked so much about Terrifier. I feel like every week we have to give a box office update on it, which I'm not sure. It's about 11 o'clock on a Sunday, so we may have some new data in a second. But I just talk about it because I've said it before. It's such a it's a genuine word of mouth phenomenon. It's something that was very small scale and a cult following online, basically translated into basically, I think it's at $10 million at the box office, and it costs $250,000. Crowdfunded. It's just like things like this don't happen, so it's really cool that it's out there and doing well. And just personally, I've said this 100 times, it kind of boggles my mind that it's out there still and that like you can walk into an AMC and see this. So you'll have to talk to me about like if it was as surreal as I'm thinking it is watching this movie in a theater, because I just can't imagine like watching something this depraved where like I still feel like watching the first one in a theater would be more fucked up because of that one scene.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, this one, maybe it's like the tone changing to being really comedic that makes it go down a little smoother. But it doesn't, I don't know. We'll talk about it. I'm getting way ahead. I'm so excited to talk about Terrifier. But that means, Jesse, that we're punting the ball on Hellraiser for at least another few weeks or a couple weeks. Because
if not years.
If not, yeah, who knows? This could be the best running bit of all time. We'll maybe never do it. Next week, we have two new releases. Are they both wide?
I think no, you know what, Bones and All is going wide over Thanksgiving. Good luck with that, guys. And it's going to doing a limited bow for a few days before Thanksgiving.
They could do some really cheeky like feast Thanksgiving ads if they were if yes. the movie was different, if the tone of the movie was entirely different.
Yes.
Or
yes.
they could do like those fake trailer, like the fake trailer they made for Barbarian to sell it after the it was doing well that made it look like a rom-com or whatever. They should do a fake trailer for that to get people in.
Yeah.
So we've got Bones and All, Timothy Chalamet, and Taylor Russell of Escape Room yes. fame.
Yes, Scream Queen Taylor Russell.
Scream Queen Taylor Russell in Bones and All, a movie from Luca Guadagnino, the director of Call Me By Your Name, the director of Suspiria, the remake, and director of a lot of stuff before that that was like very like art house acclaimed. Did he do I Am Love?
Yes.
He did I Am Love, which I remember being like a Roger Ebert favorite, 4 star out of 4. Yes. Incredible. Like, definitely, God, that must have been 2008, if my memory serves. And I definitely was working at a movie theater that was playing it and would never have seen it without Roger Ebert's urging. That's like one of those, you know, classic examples of him championing an art film that, you know, otherwise his readers may not have seen. So that is definitely an early example of that. He also did A Bigger Splash, I believe, yes, with
it's maybe my favorite of his, just in terms of like how much I enjoy it.
Dakota Johnson, Ray Fiennes, yeah. Who else is in that?
Those are the main.
Yeah,
ones.
I feel like there's the cast.
Oh well, it's Tilda. Yeah, Tilda Swinton, of course. Who's from I Am Love. Love.
Did you know, Jesse, about A Bigger Splash, which is a recut that he did that is like almost 4 hours long or something, and it's premiering at a festival this year.
Yes,
so bizarre.
As much as I like A Bigger Splash, I'm also kind of like, well, I don't want that. You're like, I don't need any more.
Would you take a recut if it were shorter, like an even small, yeah. like a little splash,
a moderate splash? Yeah, moderate splash. Sure, yeah.
Take the moderate splash. They basically just cut that scene where Ralph Fiennes was dancing because egregious, yeah. Too long. This was too fun. But I really like Luca Guadagnino. Did I really like Bones and All, a movie that I saw at the festival? Did you also see it at the New York Film Festival?
Yes, I went to one of the a public showing.
Nice.
At the festival.
Okay, so we've both seen Bones and All, and we've also both seen The Menu, which is a wide release from Searchlight Pictures, which is owned by Disney. Always confusing when a Searchlight pops up now. It's like, was this made before Disney took over?
Right.
Or did they somehow make this? It was like Barbarian, where, you know, very confusing circumstances. But it exists. We've seen it. It stars Anya Taylor-Joy. It stars Nicholas Holt. It stars the aforementioned Ralph Fiennes. It is... I guess I shouldn't give it away, but we're talking about those two movies next week. A double feature of new releases. And then who knows what's coming after that. So, you know, we'll keep you on your toes. If you have suggestions for other new stuff we could do to avoid doing Hellraiser because it's funny to us, let us know. Also, quick plug of the Patreon. We're going to be talking about Black Panther Wakanda Forever this week on there. And what did we talk about last week? We did Soft and Quiet last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Soft and Quiet, good, which is, you know.
Good chat. That's a good episode.
Really good episode about one of the most shocking movies of the year that Jesse and I disagree on big time. So it's a fun conversation. Definitely check out the Soft and Quiet convo. It is loud, hard and loud. is that what it is? All right.
Yeah, that would be what it is.
We got
to
get into this news. I feel like I've just been vamping. So the latest box office numbers just rolled in, Jesse. Let's see what we got here. Smile did another 2.3 million this weekend. It's down 42% from last week. We celebrated last week because Smile crossed 100 million domestic, and now it's at like... Or it was about to cross 100 million domestic, and it did, of course, this week. And now it's at like almost 103 domestic. But I think the real story, Jesse, I didn't think I mentioned this last week, it's at 206 worldwide.
Wow.
Smiles made $200 million. And isn't that interesting? Compare how Halloween Ends did this weekend, for example, with Smile. $147,000, Jesse. It dropped 90% from whatever theater whatever it did last week. It's gonna top out at 64 million domestic. with 103 million worldwide, which nothing to shake a stick at, right? 100 million bucks is 100 million bucks, but leaving a lot of money on the table by A, the movie being not what people wanted from it, and it being on Peacock for sure.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, it points to a weird thing about when you do a streaming debut at the same time, which is that I would imagine it works like you're leaving the least amount of money on the table when the movie's kind of right in the middle, right? Because like if it's a really great movie, you're like, ah, this could have been milked for theatrical. And if it's a really bad movie, you're like, oh no, this, like, if you had forced people to see this in the theaters, you probably could have gotten, you know, more people. Like if there's bad word of mouth on something, they might be more likely to find online or they might be more likely to spread bad word of mouth having be able to see it online. So it's kind of this weird thing where it's like, you should release the very best and the very worst without streaming because you're like, I was thinking about that, like the idea that the reason this movie might have been conceivably hurt by streaming is that I liked it a lot, but that people didn't like it generally. And if it had been sort of a middling movie, I imagine it wouldn't have, you know, a kind of middle of the road thing. It might not have been hurt so much. It's just a weird dynamic where those are the things that seem like they hurt the most. You know, if you just have something that's kind of right down, like Ticket to Paradise, maybe that might have been hurt by streaming if they put it out at the same time, because older people maybe wouldn't go out to the theater. But
Ticket to Paradise is actually the box office story of the weekend. Did you know this?
Yeah, it's doing very well.
It's back to it looks like it's number one. Is that not correct?
No, number one would be Black Panther.
Oh, sorry. What chart am I looking at? Oh, it doesn't have the Black Panther number in it yet.
Yeah, sometimes when stuff trickles out, they only have a little bit of that chart for the numbers, I feel like, was just updated, because when I looked at it, the Smile was like the only thing on it.
Okay, yeah. Paramount, so Ticket to Paradise must have been, what is that, second then with $6 million? Like, I don't think anything beat it. What
it's
else?
Probably,
is,
yeah. It's probably third after.
What, is Black Adam not on here either?
Yeah, Black Adam's not on there either.
Got it.
Yeah,
okay.
It's trickling out. So yeah, it's probably.
Sorry,
third,
everybody.
But, like,
you heard in real time me be very confused about the box office. I'm like, the number one movie for the weekend of November 11th is Ticket to Paradise with $6 million. I had completely forgotten about Black Panther because I saw it like a couple weeks ago. Wow. Okay. So yes. Black Panther, we don't have numbers yet, or they haven't put it in.
Yeah, they don't. There's like some guesses, but there's no like official studio estimate yet.
Ooh, fascinating. I'll give an update by the end of the episode if we get it.
Yeah.
Real-time box office updates. But to me, the story is Smile doing, double the amount that Halloween Ends did. Like, it just feels like a huge story about what's going on in the genre right now and how, you know, that's an original quote-unquote horror movie. It is. Straight-up original, even though you could say it's extremely indebted to things that came before it, like The Ring or It Follows or many other things. But that's a $206 million for Smile, 103 or whatever for Halloween. It's just original horror. You know what? If you got that script you've been working on, or you pull it out of the drawer and start working on it. You know what I mean? If you got a horror screenplay,
get it in front of Jason Blum.
Get it in front of Jason Blum. Get it in front of Smile was a Paramount, right? And that was a Parker Finn writer director debut. So Paramount's looking for shit like this. Paramount's had one of the best years in recent memory this year.
Yeah.
So it's just cool, man. Horror's doing great. It's inspiring to see something like Smile make 200 million bucks. It's really cool. What else do we have here? Speaking of Halloween Ends, it's been dated for digital and physical release with deleted and extended scenes. And yes, Jesse, the commentary's back. We've got David Gordon Green, Andy Matichak, and Rowan Campbell, first assistant director, Attila Selyukr, and production assistant Hugo Garza. Rowan Campbell must be an actor. Is that who plays Corey Cunningham, maybe?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
You gotta hear from Corey Cunningham.
You gotta hear from... I've had more people tweet at me about that song I made up for the Corey Cunningham episode than I've ever had tweet at me about anything on the podcast. So apparently it's an earworm. We'll see if Send In Art the Clown... ticks the box for people. What else do we got? A couple other bonus features, 6 extended and deleted scenes. There's a gag reel, which sounds funny to promote on the Halloween Ends DVD. but it's on digital on Tuesday, which I guess makes sense because they're probably going to pull it from Peacock once it hits a month out of theaters, right? And then it'll be on 4K UHD and Blu-ray December 27th. You know your boy is a, what do you call it? Not only am I a collector of Blu-rays and shit, I'm a completionist. That's the word I was looking for. And I already own the other two on 4K. So you know I'm getting that shit. But if you don't have any of them and you're a fan of them, like Jesse, this is for you. I don't know if you have, I don't know what your 4K setup is like, or if you've started in investing in.
At present, it is zero.
Nice.
You
haven't invested in the 4K Ultra HD physical media, which, you know, it's a slippery slope if you do, let me tell you. I am like selling all my Blu-rays because all I care about now is 4K. But I mentioned this just to say, Halloween 2018, Halloween Kills, Halloween Ends are getting a trilogy box set on 4K.
Oh, cool.
And I'm sure it'll be cheap when it comes out. And that, you know, two and three have commentaries. The first one does not, which is confounding. But there you have it. The rest of the news of the week, what else have we got? Netflix and Ryan Murphy are reteaming for The Watcher Season 2, which was that show based on a true story, true crime thing, but was like heavily distorted from what I can tell. Not very true to life, but people loved it. It starred Naomi Watts and Bobby Cannavale, I think. It was very big for Netflix. And then Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, which was like the biggest thing on Netflix ever, I believe. Like truly, I think it's the most anyone's ever watched anything. Is Monster the Jeffrey Dahmer story. So they've announced that show, which was called Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, they're going to do like classic Ryan Murphy serializing of it. It's going to be an anthology show now. So there'll be two more seasons of Monster, some other true life figure that we're going to make popular enough that people start wearing Jeffrey Dahmer costumes for Halloween. So yay, I guess. I haven't watched the show. Not that I'm against it or like think it's like egregious. I haven't seen it. I've actually heard from some people who say it's really good, but I did watch the Joe Berlinger directed companion piece that always comes out with these, which is like the true documentary version, which is like Jeffrey Dahmer tapes or whatever it was, that is like never before heard stuff, and that was really good. So check that out, and be on the lookout for the season twos of all those things. We've got more information on Welcome to Derry, the It movie prequel. It's the prequel to the two Stephen King movies from Andy Muschietti. The series will begin in the 1960s, in the time leading up to the events of It Part One. The story is also said to include the origin of Pennywise the Clown. Variety has also noted that Muschietti and Barbara Muschietti, both Muschiettis, including Barbara and Andy, are on board to produce. So what's the latest? Jason Fuchs and Brad Caleb Kane will serve as showrunners. HBO Max has given the show a series production commitment. Andy Muschietti is going to direct the pilot. So if you're into the It movies, this is probably very exciting news. As someone who was into It 1 and loathed It 2, which I feel like is what most of society, is that how you felt?
I didn't loathe it, but I definitely felt the air go out of it in the second one for sure.
It's just like, I just can't believe that movie got released in the form that it did, right? It's like they made it two parts, which is to say, this is going to be an unruly experience. So we're going to make it unruly for you, or less unruly. We're going to unruly it for you by making it a two-parter. And then they made the second one like 3 hours long or whatever, like two and a half hours, and just completely devoid of anything compelling, if I remember correctly. Anyway, Welcome to Derry, HBO. The trailer for John Wick Chapter 4 dropped. I haven't watched it. Did you watch it?
I did. It looks boss, but you know, they always look boss.
Yeah, of course. The trailer for the last one had like him on a horse or whatever. We were all like, oh my God. Yeah. Yes. I kind of love that they dropped the like goofy subtitle too. It's just Chapter 4 instead of, what was it before? Parabellum or something?
Parabellum was the third one. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one was just Chapter 2. So maybe they're going to go back to this chapter format. We'll see how long that lasts. So that's coming out March 24th. Chad Stahelski, the guy who directed all of them, is directing them again. Chad Stahelski. Donnie Yen's in this one, and Bill Skarsgård of It fame is in this one. And of course, Lawrence Fishburne, Lance Reddick, and Ian McShane are returning. Speaking of some of those cats, there's also a John Wick cinematic universe now, Jesse, and there's something called Ballerina, a spinoff movie starring Ana de Armas. And we also got news this week that Ian McShane will indeed appear. It says appear, it doesn't say star, so it could be a cameo. And we also know Keanu Reeves will appear in the spinoff movie Ballerina. We don't know anything about it. There's no release date, I don't think. It's being directed by Len Wiseman. I feel like I should grab a cigarette and be like, I haven't heard that name in years.
Yeah. He's back, baby.
He apparently did Swamp Thing show that was apparently good, but like a sacrifice to the weird DC streaming service thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I feel like people, he's like one of those guys people don't like that much because he's like kind of a hack. But I feel like I don't really have a big problem with him, as long as like this kind of movie sounds like it's perfect for him. Like,
I'm going to blow your mind. Did you know that Paul F. Tompkins does Len Wiseman as a character on Comedy Bang Bang?
Yeah, I am aware.
I wanted to blow your mind. Pretend you didn't know.
No, well, the 5,700 AV Club commenters have attempted to blow my mind thusly, because there's like certain Comedy Bang Bang things I don't know anything about. I don't want to watch or listen to it, but like there's a lot of stuff I'm aware of about it, because when I used to write for the AV Club, if there was any mention of certain things like Len Wiseman or Gary Marshall or whatever, people would just like go in the comments and do bits from Comedy Bang Bang. And
much to your chagrin, it sounds like.
It sounds petty.
You and my wife have the same stance on Comedy Bang Bang, which is I do not want to hear it or see it.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my God. I'm so delighted to hear that. That became my stance after surmising that that's what this was going on in the comments. And I know it wasn't any kind of, and people were just having fun with something they like, but just something about it made me go, all right, I'm never going to watch this shit, you guys. Like, you guys just ruined it, because
no,
I don't need to fucking hear it about Len Wiseman. I'm sure it is, yeah. but it's too bad. It's too bad that they ruined
it's
it.
It's too bad. It's like Rick and Morty was ruined by the guy jumping on the counter and yelling about Szechuan sauce at McDonald's. Like, we can't like it anymore.
It's similar. To be honest, it's similar. So they're both on a list. They've both been blacklisted. It's not that, no, I mean, I like all the people involved and I'll see them in other things, but I'm sorry. It's just over. It's over for me in Comedy Bang Bang. It was a brief affair of looking at comments and going, what the fuck?
You were talking while I interrupted you, though, if you remember what you were talking about.
Oh, I like Len. I kind of like, even though he's kind of a hack and like I don't want him making Die Hard movies or Total Recall remakes.
Oh God, did he purely do the Live Free one? Or did he do
the fourth one? He did the less bad post number three.
Oh, so he did Live, that one's called Live Free or Die Hard?
Yeah, it's like,
I actually
okay.
kind of like that one, but I haven't seen it since
fine.
It came out. We were laughing the other day because we were making fun of like the character trope of like comic book nerd guy, and like I was like, remember when that was Kevin Smith in Die Hard 4? Like, what a weird point in time that was.
Truly weird. I think also looking at his list of movies he's actually directed, I guess I don't like Len Wiseman that much. I think I like the Underworld movies he didn't direct more than the ones he did on average.
He directed the first one and then like
then the second one. Okay. The second one, which is trashier and better, I think. But then like I like the third one even more. So, and he didn't do that one.
I don't think I've seen any of those, honestly.
Oh really?
Yeah,
oh, man.
Maybe I saw one of them, but I have no memory of it.
They're not horror-y enough for me to say, oh, let's do them quite. But they even despite involving vampires,
you know what?
And
fans of the show might disagree. Sound off in the comments.
Yeah, people, because I have all the them all on Blu-rays. So
I would use it as an excuse to get the 4Ks, obviously. Obviously.
Yes, obviously. Anyway, Ballerina, sure. That seems like that seems like Len Wiseman's level.
What else
like,
has he done outside of Underworld? You were looking at his page.
Yeah, Underworld 2, Live Free or Die Hard, and Total Recall are his only directorial credits.
He hasn't
directed a film in 10 years.
Well,
yeah, that Total Recall really sucks.
Well, just because thankless task of doing that movie. Should never been made. Like, you're never going to make a movie that's like as good as one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. Paul Verhoeven's Total Recall. Why the fuck would you touch it? Insane. So he rightfully has been in director jail since. And
yes. He's been doing, he did some, he did TV stuff too. He did some, the X-Men show, The Gifted. Like you said, he did Swamp Thing that got shelved. He did some Lucifer. He's one of those guys who like does the pilot of a lot of flashy shows. That's all to say, like Ballerina seems like his level. That seems fine. I'm happy to, you know, would I rather it be someone who was like an awesome action director? Yes. But I feel like he can do Ana de Armas as is Ballerina.
Did we cover Swamp Thing on the show? No. If we did, the song would be Wild Thing, but it'd be Swamp Thing. Just so
yes,
you know.
Yes.
What if that's a new feature I do where I just like it's
tell
like,
them what
it's
it would
commentary.
Have been.
Yeah. Just like if we did it, it would have been this. It's we're gonna call this section OJ Simpson's If I Did It.
Yeah.
in honor of OJ. Anyway, Missing, the sequel to Searching, the Screen Life John Cho movie, has been pushed, I believe. Yeah. It was supposed to come out January 20. No, it's now coming out January 20th. It was supposed to come out February 24th.
It's been moved up.
It moved up. Storm Reid and Nia Long are starring alongside a bunch of other people. I don't know who they are. Will Merrick and Nick Johnson wrote it. The film will tell a different story from the original. The script is based on a story by, I think, the person who did the first one. The plot is under wraps, feature a new set of characters, an evolved Screen Life format where the story plays out on the screens of characters' devices. Sounds cool. I'm super excited about it. I'm a little sketched out that we haven't heard a word about it at all, but maybe, you know, I feel like Sony just like last minute starts promoting the fuck out of things a lot of the time.
Yeah, they got to get a trailer out there, don't they? I guess it's still a couple months away.
Yeah, January 2023, you'd think we'd start getting a trailer probably pretty soon, actually. I don't know if y'all saw this on Twitter, I believe, or I guess it was Guillermo del Toro's Instagram account, but he posted like a never-before-seen test footage reel of CG tests he made for his abandoned At the Mountains of Madness Lovecraft adaptation. And it's like this 60-second clip of like a Lovecraftian monster revealing a humanoid thing within it. And it's pretty cool looking, I will admit. All CGI test for a rig, Industrial Light and Magic for At the Mountains of Madness a decade ago, never before seen. That's what he posted. 25 seconds long. Check it out. If you also are into Lovecraft, check out several of the Cabinet of Curiosities and listen to our episode from last week. Speaking of Luca Guadagnino from earlier, what if I spliced that in better so it made sense? He just mentioned that he would like to do a mummy movie. I think he was asked, like, if you could do a Universal Monster movie, what would it be? I'm assuming. And he said, I think it would be amazing to do something about the mummy. It's a rotten body in rotten bandages. So what's inside is as interesting as what's outside. It should be very scary and very, very terminal. It should be a little movie with a lot of depth and very scary. There was a Joe Dante mummy that never happened that I feel so bad about because Joe is such a master and I'm sure he would have done something incredible. Totally agree on the Joe Dante. And I agree that his version of the mummy sounds cool and like completely different than like the action adventure versions that we got, which of course I'm not complaining. I love the Brendan Fraser first two mummy movies.
And you famously love the Tom Cruise one.
Yes, famously. Very good movie. Dark Universe's The Mummy kickoff? It definitely spawned a whole universe.
Yeah, there's a whole vast universe for us to explore. I would be interested to see him take on the mummy. I would also be interested in seeing him make a movie that's genuinely scary in any way. So, I don't know. Maybe he could practice on something else.
Ooh, burn. I'm excited to talk about Bones and All with you, and then I'm also excited to talk about it on Roger and Me, because I just saw Mark. Spoiler alert, if you're a Mark Reviews Movies head, because I get the Patreon early, and he gave it 4 stars. And
good God.
I don't dislike it as much as you do, but I definitely don't love it that much. So I'm excited to talk about it on both ends, you know? It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I guess I really spoiled how we feel about that movie, but you'll...
I feel mixed enough that I feel like I don't even know yet exactly.
For sure. So I kind of want to hope to see it again before next week, actually. Maybe a lot of time. And maybe The Menu, too. The Menu I saw so long ago, but I remember it vividly because I quite enjoyed it. Jenna Ortega promises action-heavy and gore-heavy sequel in Scream 6. And we have last we heard Neve Campbell's not coming back. We don't know if this is an elaborate hoax. But Jenna Ortega said, I feel like I can't really speak too much on Sydney just because it's not necessarily my character. But I will say there's so much going on in this one. It's so action heavy and gore heavy. I think you're going to be distracted almost. But it's very clear, like, there are references to Sydney, of course. You know, it's nice because there's still a protectiveness in the script. And there's something about the actors had naturally over her because of obviously we respect her and we want the best for her. She's missed and thought of. I really want to believe that she's sneakily in it, but it really seems like she's not. We know all about that movie. I've mentioned the cast and the director a million times. I will move on. Screambox has acquired Living with Chucky, the Child's Play documentary that played all the horror festivals that I just couldn't bring myself to leave my house to go watch a documentary in a theater that I could watch on Screambox in a few months. So Screambox in 2023. I believe it's written and directed by Kyra Elise Gardner, daughter of legendary special effects artist Tony Gardner, who worked on the movies, I think. So it sounds like I've heard it was good. So I'm excited about that. James Wan took to Instagram recently to talk about The Crooked Man, a movie or a character from The Conjuring 2 that at one point was promised to be one of like the cinematic universe of The Conjuring spinoffs, and it never happened. So here's what James Wan said. He wrote in his post, "No, unfortunately, the spinoff movie with the character isn't happening outside of my control." But he always says this, "But maybe one day." The post came with a reminder that The Crooked Man was all Javier Botet and camera tricks. I filmed him in slow-mo and reverse playback, an old school camera trick. The horror filmmaker previously said, "I think we have a really exciting story for The Crooked Man. What we want to do with the Conjuring universe is we want each of these little offshoots to have a very different flavor, right? So, for example, Annabelle is this classic sort of haunted doll subgenre. And with The Crooked Man, I would love to push it more down somewhat of a dark fairy tale and more whimsical subgenre. I love that idea."
That sounds nice. Huh? Yeah. That sounds good.
Right? Yeah, it's a bummer this one didn't happen because, like, they went with, what, The Nun? Which is, like, the most, like, we've seen nun movies and we've seen this type of horror. And he said more whimsical, blah, blah, blah. "I love that idea within the Conjuring universe. Each of these little movies having their own flavor, blah, blah, blah." So The Nun 2, September 8th, 2023. The Crooked Man, never. But The Conjuring 4 is also coming. Anya Taylor-Joy recently mentioned in an interview that the day she was offered The Witch was the same day she got asked to be in a Disney Channel pilot. "And it was so exciting to be offered anything at all that I ran around the house like a loon. But I just had this really good feeling about The Witch that made me feel, that made me willing to forego the Disney experience for the thing that felt unknown to me, the thing that felt sacred." She says, "It gave me the cornerstones of the way I work now, which is essentially the idea that there is no hierarchy on set. You work hard, you stay on top of the shots, and you don't assume anyone else is going to do that for you. Your title doesn't stop at actor. You're a creative on this film, and that's how you need to approach it. I thought I'd done a really bad job, and I saw myself failing miserably with this dream I'd had for such a long time. I guess I'm not always the best judge of my own work." Anya Taylor-Joy is in The Menu, out next week. Jesse, let's get right into Terrifier 1, I guess, because you watched it first.
Yeah, I did. I watched it in the correct order. I watched it in release order. I didn't use machete order or... Art the Clown's handgun order or anything. I just watched it. So I had never. Did you and Joe cover this when it came out?
So no, like, I think because the release date's like 2016, right?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you because sometimes these things play festivals.
Yeah, so it definitely has been around since then. I don't know when it actually came out, but I feel like it had to have been around 2019 because like that's when Joe started hearing about it and brought it to me, and we watched it and talked about it. I also am kind of unaware of it, but it was definitely not like something that got a real release. It was not a, it was a small thing. I don't remember how we watched it. I'm sure we, had to rent it on VOD or something, but like it was not a known entity. And I feel like the reason Joe wanted to cover it is because like, we got to like tell people about this fucked up movie. It's crazy. Like the horror blogs were talking about it. And I guess that's how it ended up becoming what it is today.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I was watching it going, like, I knew it was like a low budget, you know, indie thing. And I mean, I was perhaps taken aback by watching it, how the degree to which it resembled like someone's like, I mean, which I guess it was someone's like personal project.
I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah, like $35,000.
Yeah,
the first one
cost.
But like, I understand what you're saying, but like at the same time, I understand that like it does look cheap. You definitely see the cheapness in like how it's like shot. It's like in a warehouse for a large portion of it and stuff like that. But at the same time, when Joe and I talked about it, I just can't believe the mileage they get out of $35,000 and like the gore is mostly and the makeup and the practical effects, like that stuff looks like top notch, better than $1 million movies. and it costs nothing. And like, that's what makes up for the DIY charm, I guess, for me.
Yeah, I mean, I found that kind of charming and impressive to an extent. To me, it's like less about it looking cheap, although the kind of texture of it was, I was kind of like, wow, what did they shoot this on? Like, there was this, like, yeah, sure, this was shot on digital. It's interesting. It like looks more, I guess some of it's probably an aesthetic choice, because, well, part of me, I was just like wondering, when was this shot? Because, you know, what digital looks like. Like, this is not, it had kind of, I'm not enough of an expert to say, to look at it offhand and say, this is how it shot. It must have been shot digitally, right? I don't think it was shot on film. It's got a weird in-between thing where it kind of fits their aims of making sort of like a grody 80s, you know, something you see on VHS horror movie. Because it doesn't really look like modern digital, in some ways in a really good way. Because I think a lot of low-budget digital movies now have this different kind of, like, overly processed looking, kind of like slick, but like it looks like an amateur music video kind of aesthetic. Sure. A lot of like, you know, I feel like I don't know why this pops out as an example of this, but like Red State, the Kevin Smith movie, I remember watching that and going like, god damn, this just looks like some rock band's video, but not like an expensive 90s rock band video, like a collapsed industry digital, you know, music video. And this one does not have that aesthetic at all. Like, it has, you know, it looks grimy and like kind of lo-fi, but it also doesn't look like 35 millimeter or 60 millimeter or, you know, anything like that. It doesn't have that like grain.
Is Jesse's house on fire?
Yeah, it is. It is that Arthur Clown, I'm sad to report, has burned down my house.
Jesse, get out of
he
there.
He heard me talking shit about, I'm going to go down with it. It's my fault. I was talking shit about Terrifier. No, it has like, you know, the aesthetic that I just thought was like interesting and then ultimately kind of deadening, where I was like, I don't know what aesthetic this is. This looks like early digital, not quite as glitchy as early digital, but not as like, it's not like Michael Mann digital either, where you're like, ooh, this is turning digital against, you know, into something that it's its own thing. You know, like I was just like, I wanted to like examine the texture of this movie for a long time. Just to like, I should have just like looked up how they shot it, but I forgot to. So I just found it like interesting, but also eventually kind of like not that exciting visually. And then moreover, I love the idea that it's supposedly just like, it's just like these two girls are out on Halloween and like, and end up embroiled in Arthur Clown shenanigans. And he's stalking them through this like gross apartment building. And then like eventually one of their siblings comes into the mix to like extend it a little more. Fine. I just like didn't think it was a very good 85 minute chase scene, you know? Like,
yes,
it's okay.
I think the way
it doesn't really, it's not tense to me. It's just like, it doesn't have that kind of like, oh, this is a master, you know, wringing suspense out of low, like a low budget location. It's kind of like, well, no, this is like a middling slasher movie.
Sure.
And it's certainly as good as a lot of slasher movies that were made for much more money. I've definitely seen worse slasher movies that cost 10 to 20 times more than this movie did. No, more than,
yeah,
that, probably, you know,
way
100
more.
Times,
yeah,
more.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you, and like what I say to that is, yes, I could see that being like, yes, as a, it's not, you're not going to go away being like, Demi Leone should direct stalk and kill sequences, like he's amazing,
yeah,
at,
yeah,
building tension or something, but you do go away saying this guy should do the practical effects and gore on every horror movie. Like,
oh yeah,
like
there is,
it's like,
yeah, that stuff.
So
is
like
very,
I would,
well,
say
done.
It's in a different way, like a, you could, I don't know if I've described it this way on the pod before, but to me it's like, you know, like a director's like showreel, like it's like a,
yeah,
less a movie and more like you're watching a director like pitch this, show this at a meeting, and like it's like a demo reel to get him a bigger job or something. Like, look what I can,
yeah,
do,
yeah,
with such little money. I can do all this horrific shit, the most horrific gore you've ever seen in your life, and it cost me no money. Like, truly.
It's like,
yeah,
it's, I don't mean to sound like the studio exec or whatever, but I do. It does to me kind of feel like, and this is actually part of its charm, a demo reel where you'd show it, the guy, I'm picturing the guy showing this as the demo reel and then looking expectantly at the execs going, yeah, like, and then being, and the execs being like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
no,
like,
no,
well, the woman's being, the woman's being sawed,
yeah,
in half from her crotch down. Yeah. She's getting bone,
yeah,
tomahawked, and he's like looking expectantly,
yeah,
at them all. Huh?
He's like, would you do your movies where people get sawed in half from the groin down? You can hire me. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
We don't do that. Like,
that's never been, that's been done by one guy, and everyone decided it was too much.
Yeah. And like one of them's calling security.
Yeah.
Like, get this guy out of here. Which, I mean, that's part of its like sicko, you know, underground horror movie charm. It's also like, I just like found it not that interesting to watch after a while. And like, I really feel conflicted about what I think a lot of people talked about as being like funny or like subversion of expectations or whatever. That like at one point Art the Clown just whips out a gun.
Yes, that's one of my favorite moments. You don't like that?
But then like doesn't the rest of the movie? I don't know. I feel like that was I feel like it gets you a big shock laugh and a big shock sort of scare, a startle.
Yeah.
And then like they kind of sacrifice the back half of the movie to that moment. Because then after that, it's just kind of like, oh, I mean, because it's like, what's the tension at that point? He has a gun.
He can do anything. Like, well, I think, can, yeah, I guess.
And like, and he never, yeah, yeah. There's just kind of a kind of, you know, there's a lot of slasher movies where the slasher is sort of like, turns out to be surprisingly unbeatable.
Well, yeah, that's like the, that's the moment where I guess it's different than like him becoming like Michael Myers-y and being immortal, which I guess is what happens at the beginning of two. But it is in a similar vein, right?
Yeah, and I just for whatever reason the like kind of suspense element of like the oh shit moment, I was just kind of like, oh, so, okay, so it doesn't matter. He's just gonna fucking kill people.
So that specific moment I've talked about a lot, probably on the Joe episode and on the Roger and Me clip, because I've made so many people watch this movie. I made Mark watch this movie too, because Mark's another one who like sees everything, and I'm like, you didn't see this one, buddy, and he did. Yeah, so I've talked about that moment. I really like it because as a horror dork who's read, you know, Carol Clover's seminal text, Men, Women, and Chainsaws, who like, that's like where the final girl is defined and stuff like that. All these like key horror terms come from. She specifically talks about the slasher genre and how like just defining rules for it and how the slasher uses anything but a gun is how she phrases it. I think like it's a really good paragraph where she's talking about this thing. I wish I had it handy. I could pull it up if we care. But she talks about how the slasher uses anything but a gun, and she lists like, you know, the machete, the this, the that, the axe, whatever. And so I think this is specifically just like a fun little shout out to that and being like, yeah, well, fuck your horror rules. We're breaking them. We're straight up breaking like the ground rule of horror. And also it's what killing the final girl too, and it's like a two in one moment, I think, where it's just like subversion. And
yeah,
I guess that can be annoying and provocative. It's provocative
but yeah, it's sort of like, it does, to me it just doesn't go anywhere from that. It doesn't really do anything with the idea.
Yeah, I've seen other people say lazy rules. Like Art just starts shooting people lazy. I'm like, no, it's making like, a point. Yeah,
it is. It kind of is, but like then the movie goes on for a long time, and I don't really see much connecting to back to that moment. You know what I mean? Like it's just sort of not to cast aspersions upon Leon here, because actually we'll talk about it, I kind of enjoyed the second one more. But in that moment, I was kind of like, this just feels like a guy who like, yeah, maybe he's read that book, but like mostly he's like, yo, wouldn't it be fucking cool if he just like brought out a gun? And it's like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but maybe
like,
I'm giving him too much credit. Maybe the guy who made Terrifier doesn't read books. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm not trying to, I'm just being an asshole.
No, I he's obviously like a whiz with special effects. And I think he did some really cool stuff with the second one, but that kind of took me out of the movie, not because you can't have a horror movie guy with a gun. I think there is something kind of potent and interesting about that.
There definitely should be a horror character with a gun that's more focused than like, I mean, Art's having a gun is not a thing. It's just like a moment. And like, you're right. There should be like a horror movie where the villain's a guy with a gun. Cause nothing scares me more in this country.
Yeah, no, it's a much more efficient way. Yeah. Like you can get away from a guy in the real world. A guy with a knife is not that hard to get away from. And the guy with a gun is a lot. Yeah. It's a lot scarier. And you know, I didn't hate the movie. I was just sort of like, all right.
Arms folded, unimpressed.
Yeah. And I didn't want to be, I wanted to like have fun with a nasty little VHS throwback. I did love the design of Art the Clown.
That's what I mean. Like, and that's where I get down to thinking like, okay, so this movie cost $35,000. Doesn't it cost that much to put the dude in makeup every day? Like, it looks so good. Like, how do they do this? And I guess it's pretty basic, but the dude, and not only is the makeup great and the, like the outfit and the fucking little hat, the whole costume is great.
Yes.
But it's a great performance. I don't think it's silly to say that David Thornton, I always say it wrong, David Howard Thornton gives a really good like lead horror guy performance. I think he's really creepy.
Yeah, he is really good, and like the kind of physicality of the character is like creepy and effective, and the makeup contributes to that certainly, and the little hat contributes to that certainly. I was spending a lot of the movie going like, look at that hat.
Did you love the way that, like, the second one immediately uses the hat? I feel like, doesn't he immediately put the little hat over his head wound or whatever
in
the
beginning? Yeah, I did enjoy that, of course. So like, I enjoyed aspects of it, but I was dreading. I went from like being curious to kind of dreading the specter of having agreed to see.
Yeah,
Terrifier
I was going to ask
after if, watching.
It's
Terrifier.
Okay. You answered my question there. I'll just quickly sum up my Terrifier 1 thoughts.
Yeah.
I just, you know, what I've always said, and I've probably said it on the show before, but if you happen to only be listening because you only care about what Jesse thinks about Terrifier, so this is
what
all
a strange
new
demographic
to you.
That would
oh
be.
Yeah, there's a few Jesse heads out there. The Hassan heads. The Hedingers? No, that's
Hedingers?
Weird.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
It's
a horror movie for the horror fans who say, I wish they wouldn't cut away from the gore. It's truly repulsive. Disgusting, gory practical effects, delivers what you want, probably too much. You feel dirty afterwards. Trashy, sleazy, tastelessness taken to an extreme. Like, and that is what it is. And like, I appreciate it for that, but you basically are saying the same thing, but it's like, instead of being 4 stars, you're like two and a half stars.
Yeah.
I don't care that much. I also think I guess the reason I was trying to parse where it came from, and my second log on Letterboxd reminded me that, you know, Dread Central distributed the first one. And Bloody Disgusting did the second one. So, haha, New Flesh is going to do the third one, probably.
Yeah.
But there's nothing in the more expansive sequel that we're going to talk about that comes close to the visceral nastiness of the fucking bone tomahawk kill in this movie. You haven't mentioned it. Did it ruin your... Did you look away? Did you watch? It's the most disgusting thing on earth. It's excruciating.
It was gross, and I did like.
Do you have
I
like that?
Flinched.
Do you have that like remove where you can be like, this is a movie, and these are practical effects, and this isn't phasing me.
There is when they look a certain way, or sometimes there's like a. I'm sure that you could graph this where after a certain point, I'm able to go, oh, okay, this is when you. I mean, I'm sure this is something horror directors think about in terms of how to linger on the gore and when to cut away and why a lot of them cut away. Sometimes they cut away because they want a PG-13. Sometimes you cut away because if you linger on it, it starts to look like makeup. And I think the Terrifier movies have that in kind of an interesting way, both of them, where they linger on it so much where instead of getting increasingly disgusting and increasingly visceral, it kind of comes back around where I'm like, I wouldn't even say I find it funny, but he's kind of like, if you really linger the camera on there, you start to really see like, yeah, this is makeup. Like, cause this is probably not what this would look like. Or if it would be look, I have so little frame of reference that, you know, it's very,
yeah,
it's very
woman being sawed in half. This is not realistic to my experience.
Yeah. Right. After a point, you're kind of going, well, that and that one is probably more upsetting, I think, than some of the stuff where you're like, you know, face is getting smushed. I kind of go, okay, well, now it's just like gunk. You can just see that it's makeup gunk. Like, it's just, you know, it becomes abstract again. It kind of, you know, goes around in full circle, and I'm not as disgusted. But there definitely are moments with gory movies where I either look away or flinch for a second or you know, feel a little bit like, ugh, gross. I had a couple like vocal, like, ugh, while watching these movies, like Terrifier at home, especially. I feel like my wife probably heard me go like, ugh, once or twice.
Oh, Mandy walked in the room during not that bad part. Thankfully.
Okay. I was going to say, you're still married, so
yeah,
probably not during that part.
Yeah. She walked in during just like an Art the Clown being like silly, scary, like wavy or whatever. And she was like, nope, turn it off. Nope. No. Yeah. She's like, no, we're not doing this. Like, why?
Yeah.
Like, this is, it's midnight. We're in bed. What is this? Yeah. Why are you doing this to me? But
yeah.
So yeah, I always ask that, or I've never asked that, but I think it's interesting to talk about. The remove, because when Mandy is when she's watching something like that, I just go, it's not real, it's like not fake. But at the same time, it's so funny. I have a double standard because she watches like Grey's Anatomy, and that has graphic, what I would say is like realistic surgeries, and
yeah,
I don't know how like much research is done or how much they like make it look real, but to me, that shit I have to look away from. I'm like, ugh, I can't. I like viscerally react every time I catch her watching that, and it's so funny to me because I'll be watching the Bone Tomahawk kill, and she'll and be like, "Oh, yeah, it's fine." But it's not fine. Well, you know, I'm fucked up by it. Also,
it's also that maybe this is not the case for you, but I feel like this is probably part of the case for me. Why I can watch both of those things, but probably do flinch more at surgery than I do at ridiculous gore, is because you know that it's entirely possible in your life that you will have a surgical procedure, and sure, you don't really think it's possible that Art the Clown is gonna cut you in half. Like,
well, now I do.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, I know. Now that I've talked shit about his movie,
we're on his shit list. Here. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, statistically, it seems more likely that you're going to have surgery than killed by a murderous clown. So, like, it hits home more. Like, you probably know someone who's had surgery, and then you can think about, oh, Jesus, that's what they were doing to Bob. You know,
excuse me, I have a cousin who was sawed in half by a clown.
Yeah, exactly. Until you know someone who's been sawed in half by Art the Clown, it's not the same thing.
It's true.
Yeah, I have to, when talking about Terrifier 2, I have to make fun of a little bit of the Q&A that was after, where, and this really speaks to what you're talking about in terms of it being like a demo reel, because they have this interview with the Bloody Disgusting guys.
The Boo Crew?
Like doing the Boo Crew, yeah, the Boo Crew does a little Q&A with him, like, you know, a recorded Zoom, basically. Yeah,
that's great promo for them. I mean, $10 million worth of people have seen that now.
Yeah, it's neat, and it was cool. I stuck around and watched a little bit of it, and they were talking about like what his goals were for the sequel, and he's like talking about how, like, oh, you know, we're really gonna, like, you know, kind of step it up for, you know, one thing. He basically says, in so many words, one of the things we wanted to do in the sequel is have a protagonist. and he doesn't exactly say, I mean, maybe he's saying that in a self-effacing, self-aware way, but he doesn't say it as like a laugh line. Like, the Boo Crew doesn't like laugh at this the way I laughed when I heard him say that. I was like, kind of laughed. I was like, oh no, are you serious? Like,
did other people stay for the Q&A?
The two people, the reason I saw those two people to get sitting together was because they were still watching the Q&A, but other people did not, I don't think. I was like, that really speaks to the first one feeling like a demo reel kind of thing.
Yeah,
because he's like, oh yeah, well, this one we're gonna have a character
story. Well, like, that's another thing I wrote about the first one, is I appreciate that it has no story and it's just a nonstop stalk and kill chase sequence that's a vehicle for disgusting practical effects and art and nothing more, and I think it works regard. Go ahead.
I generally would think I would like that, because I'm not a big like story guy. No,
maybe
like,
after all the lore you've been injected, all the lore you've been injected with after two, now you can go back and watch Terrifier, and you're like, this rocks.
Yeah, it'll be like the fucking prequel or whatever. Yeah. I'm not usually one complaining about story. I die a little inside every time I hear someone talk about story or story structure or whatever. Even though I know those things are necessary, I just like it. It always makes me cringe, because you just sound like an aspiring screenwriter when you're like, oh, the stories we tell about Art the Clown. this is really a story about, it's like, no, it's about a fucking clown, like, to cutting people in half. But I did find Terrifier 2 more engaging for including a feature such as protagonist and
themes.
Things happening for reasons.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I was just like more able to hook into it, even though it's insanely overlong.
Yes.
And there's like
an hour
a lot about
long.
It. Yeah, it's just like, it's not like, and I couldn't even tell you, like, it's not like I was bored or falling asleep or going, oh, the scene is never ending.
You could
ending.
Cut the
but
fucking Clown
about
Cafe
it.
Song a bit. I'd say that.
Yeah, there's plenty. It gives you so much. It gives you a wide variety of things. I could see why it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, because, like, if it doesn't occur to you to cut, you know, some of the stuff, why would it occur you to cut anything
like you're
else?
Not like, cutting the gore, because the whole point is every gore scene goes right. on farther than you think it's going to the point of one of the scenes where Art leaves the room and then comes back with salt and bleach and shit. Like, it just takes everything to such extremes. So, like, I feel like the 2 hours
die as fast as they should,
right?
You know, so like they're still alive,
right.
and screaming while
and
they're
so they can being... be an animatronic, which I think is great.
Yeah. So like so when you're not cutting that, then it's kind of like, well, what are we going to cut the story out for the sake of gore? No, you'll leave the story in. So then he leaves in both, and you have this 2-hour 20-minute movie.
And like the 2-hour 20-minuteness of it also plays into that in a way of like, yeah, every scene goes on too long. So does the movie. Like, the movie's like this whole overlong. I mean, they're calling it what, like a mega slasher? Like, they're trying to like define it as like, this isn't a typical slasher. It's bigger than that. It's like an epic. It's
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it succeeds on all that, all those terms, but it's trying to.
Yeah.
Do that.
I wouldn't say it quite gets there, but I did enjoy the introduction of the kind of like gnarly fantasy horror angle. Just because I need a little more of a reason for Art the Clown to be unstoppable besides he has a gun. Like, because like you said, like in real life, yes, someone with a gun is like harder to stop, and that's very scary. But like, that's not really what this movie's going after, what these movies are going after. So like, if you're going to have that there, that like, oh, he just can't be stopped. I kind of appreciate the like adding in the kind of supernatural level, which is so annoying when they do it more explicitly with Michael Myers in or Jason. I guess I haven't seen that many of the Jason movies.
We got to like, do Friday here, the 13th before we do Hellraiser.
Yeah. We got to get it all 10 to 11 of the Friday the 13th. Then we got to do the series that'll be out, the old series, the new series. It'll be a long wait for Hellraiser, but it'll be worth it. By the time Terrifier 3 comes out, we'll have done Hellraiser. But like, I like that kind of introduction of weird fantasy elements in here, especially as it goes on and you're like, oh, like this girl, the final girl, is going to be wearing this like ridiculous cheesecake outfit of like that just says to me like it's supposed to be like something her dad designed, and she like likes that about it, which is kind of cute. And it's also like, oh, your dad was like a horny nerd like, weirdo.
Yeah,
your dad was like one of these guys, like that's not cool, man. But like I also as a nerd creep myself enjoy like the final girl wearing like gnarly armor and wings and shit, like, and with a sword and like squaring off and realizing she alone can defeat Art the Clown. I was into that stuff. It's like silly and weird, and I didn't really know why it was happening. And like, even that, it's so interesting, like hearing Leon talk about this, because in some ways he's doing something that's very new and weird, and some ways he's doing something that's kind of throwbacky and cool and gnarly and 80s-y, and in some ways he just reflects the absolute like very modern and very bankrupt sense of like, you know, of world building and like franchising, where like, sure, you can say the first one's sort of your proof of concept movie, and that's sort of why it exists, and that's fine. It's in the spirit of an 85-minute, you know, exploitation movie. And then the second one, but when you hear him talking about how like the second one changes it up by having a protagonist and a story, and then talk about how like there'll be so many things they can explore in the third one, and some of what he's talking about, what
he's
they
like,
can explore in the third one.
Think about this. Two protagonists.
where he's more like, think about this. There might be reasons for things that happened in this movie that we'll explore
movie. I'm assuming what he does is they ask about all these fucking threads he sets up and doesn't pay off in two, and he just goes, no, you wait. I'm going to figure my way out of that situation I wrote myself into. Yeah.
Sometimes that's fun. Like, I think there are movies like John Wick and Fast and Furious that turn that into kind of a feature, not a bug, you know?
Sure.
But when you're making like a slasher movie, there's something kind of I say this as someone who kind of enjoyed Terrifier 2, there's something a little bit obnoxious about saying, oh, well, here we're going to introduce this element, and then later we'll tell you why it's in the movie. And it's like, well, dude, I'm watching the fucking movie right now. I was here for 2 hours and 20 minutes. Maybe you could tell me what's happening during the movie that you made. Like,
yeah.
You didn't have enough time
like
to get into it.
How obtuse it is once you actually try to like figure out what they're trying to say, because it's not really anything.
Yeah.
It's just all like alluding to the idea of like, what if this was a plot line? And like,
right.
Maybe not.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
It all kind of feels like vamping. Like,
yeah.
But scene to scene, this one, yes. Even though it's long scene to long scene, I was into it and enjoying it more. I thought, you know, it's kind of, it just turns from the more, you know, okay, this feels like an amateur movie that's well done, but not like a, you know, not an amazing well done amateur movie, to being like, oh, this is a pretty cool amateur movie. Like this does kind of feel like something you could conceivably have rented in 1985.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I say that's kind of full of shit when I say that, because I wasn't renting these movies in 1985. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It kind of feels more like an actual 80s artifact and like has enough going on. There's what did you think of like I was curious what you thought of the acting of the movie.
Oh, well, the mom, I think, is the most point outable as like, is that overacting? What would you say the mom is doing?
Well, it's like, it's just interesting that every authority figure, and again, you could try to say this is like a thematic thing, and I'm not sure if it actually is. Every authority figure, everyone sort of quasi adult in the movie,
yeah,
plays it at a weird pitch of apoplectic rage,
yes,
for no reason.
Yes.
Even like,
yes,
the teachers at the school where the younger kid goes, like he like runs by one of them, and one of them is like, hey, where are you going? Like, it's like what are you? You're like a teacher, and you're like barking at this kid, like I'm gonna fucking kill you. Like, it's just all kind of overamped, and the mother does that too. She just is like angry for reasons that are not delved into thematically, and it's only later in the movie that I was like, oh, she's not. I think she's supposed to be a little bit gruff, but like, I don't think she's actually as supposed to be as furious, like absolutely rage filled as the movie makes her seem. So it's just like, it is a weird thing. But I did enjoy Lauren Lavera, the main girl. I thought she was like a good scrappy final girl, especially for someone who I assume has not been in that many movies, and like was sort of into her performance, and certainly still enjoy the David Howard Thornton performance as Art. And like, I generally thought this movie was a little better acted and felt a little more professional than the first one. But it is just such a weird mix of like being kind of this big epic effects filled lore filled movie, and also still being like a cheapy VHS, like, you know, bottom of the barrel kind of thing.
Yeah. So what I feel like I really want is something in the middle of these two, right? Like a Terrifier 1.5, yeah. Something between the no story mode and the Terrifier 2 way too much story mode that doesn't actually amount to much or anything.
Yeah.
It's not that, right. 2 is intricate as much as it's long, right? And
yes. That's a good way of putting it.
I think, just to close the loop on 1, you know, the first one, it feels like they're doing the final sequence of the original 78 Halloween, but the entire movie, right? Like, that's like the whole pitch, I feel like. And it's just, what if that, but the most repulsive on-screen kills the whole time? And it's clearly emulating that. The score is a big hint, I think, for me, as to what the movie's trying to be.
Yeah.
It's like, we love Halloween. It's just the start of slashers. We love slashers. And it's all the more impressive when you consider how cheap it is, and that most movies cost 1,000 times more and don't make as much or don't look as good. This is a perfect midnight movie for me. And then 2, as I said about 2, like, I'm somewhere in the middle on it. Like, I appreciate the big ideas with no follow through. Did Terrifier 2 need a central metaphor about defeating inherited evil from your dad that killed himself? Like, no, but many complained about a lack of that in the first one.
Right,
and it's 2022.
Right.
Everything's a metaphor for trauma. So we get that. I preferred the, like, is my brother a school shooter type of theme and route that they were going.
Yeah, I love the thread that they do not really follow through on at all, of like, oh, is he kind of into Art the Clown because he's like a little teenage edgelord, you know? Like,
yes.
Is he going to be seduced into becoming his apprentice or
like
something?
It's like the real follow through, or if they were to have followed through on it, I guess it's not actually. But like, it's like the follow through or like a continuation of, I just rewatched Knives Out, and they have that little Nazi kid character who they keep calling Nazi kid. But like, it's this movie definitely is like, to me, that's like Damien Leone trying out subtext, right? Is that like him being like, this is a scene where the brother is talking about how he knows everything about Arthur Clarke and he wants to be in for Halloween. He's talking about it in such terms. There's also something about, the mom says he talks about Hitler or something, right? Like, there's some Nazi, some sort of Nazi thing. Like, they're definitely implying like, what if your incel was your brother? Like, there's definitely this.
Yeah.
And like, they even apply later, like, you could, the movie makes you think for a minute, or you could definitely be like, step away and look at it as a metaphor. Like, is this movie, is the little boy the killer? Like, cause he has the, you know, the dead animal in school and shit like that. Like, there's all these scenes that imply, like, is it him? Like, what's going on? But again, these storytelling here is all empty gestures alluding to the idea of a backstory for everything, for Art, for the lead, but it doesn't commit to any of it. And I think it works as a dual narrative, but not as any sort of explanation. And I think it's fine, but I prefer the first one, which is like an 80-minute sizzle reel of gore. But at the same time, I think about this one, I still haven't stopped thinking about it. I still want to go see it again, which is nuts considering how long it is and considering that it's a full hour too long, and it goes all in on attempting lore, but doesn't give me any coherent takeaway from it. And it just makes up new rules as it goes too, I feel like. And
I mean, like the kind of mid-credit sequel tease is like even more.
Yeah. And like, it's so like, funny, promise Chris Jericho in the opening credits and then not deliver him until the post-credit sequence, which was such a weird thing. You know, I appreciated that scene in the middle that basically begs for audience walkouts, and I'm sure a lot of people do leave there, but I still feel like that's nothing compared to the saw splitting in the first one, because that one's just like upsetting and makes you feel gross, whereas this one is gross, but like, again, all these scenes go on too long to the point of hilariousness, and like the movie's in on the joke this time. Is that the difference?
It's hard to tell. Like, I think the movie's more like, it's emboldened in some ways. Like, it's like, okay, this does feel like, oh, now that, okay, what if you could do anything? You know, obviously Terrifier 1 is not like a movie that you make. If you could do any movie in the world, what would you do? It's more of a, like, here's what I can do with what resources I have movie. Terrifier 2 is like, well, if you know, Blue Sky, you could do anything. And obviously they didn't have the money to do literally anything, but you have a much bigger budget. You know, what are you going to do? And what Leone comes up with is like, well, yeah, I would just make it like Terrifier, but like longer and with like lore and like, a more elaborate everything. And I kind of enjoyed that about it. Like, and I don't know if that is because it's more self-aware about it. And I feel like in some ways it's more emotionally involving. Like, I don't think there's anything as egregious to me as shooting the final girl, who's like the most likable character in the movie, in the middle of the movie, and then leaving you to go like, okay, now we're just going to watch Art the Clown, you know, win. And in this one, I was like, oh no, but I felt like, you know, I wouldn't say I was emotionally involved, but I liked Lauren Lavera's Sienna and I wanted her to win, you know, like, and I felt like it was possible in this movie that she could win. And there was more suspense then to me in the final stretch when she's fighting Arthur Clown, because I know that he'll do it, that Leone would kill her off. Like, I don't think he would blanch at doing that, but I also felt like, oh, well, she's got a shot. She's like, they wouldn't put her in that Avenging Angel costume if they didn't think she had a shot. He's just also interesting, like, as a stylist. He's like a masterful stylist at makeup and like design, creature design, or like, you know, makeup design, stuff like that, and not that much at actual directing. Like, there's stuff in this that where it goes kind of like, you know, fantasy action mode at the end that could be a lot cooler than it is. I don't mean that sounds like churlish, I guess, to complain, because it's a lot more than what's going on in Terrifier Part 1. But you know, the stuff with her in the angel costume fighting Art the Clown, like, could, like, they're not great fight scenes, and they're not like great, you know, I don't know. Like, it's interesting, like, to see both his great strengths and his limitations are both like just blown up to a big canvas here, because some of the makeup stuff is like really extraordinary and extraordinarily gross. I think even more so for me than someone being cut in half in the first one, because some of this stuff has to be more sustained. You know, they're like characters who are like, have to stay alive while they're being, you know, all gross and gory.
It's a particularly bad case of someone being cut in half.
Yeah, exactly. It's a particularly bad case of being skinned alive while, you know, having half of your face bashed in or whatever. So it's just like interesting to see both those strengths and weaknesses magnified. And that's sort of what it is for me, ultimately, is that you're like, it's all sort of blown up to a bigger scale. And I was surprised, but I actually kind of preferred it this way, just because I felt like, I don't know, I felt like I was getting a little more of a movie this time, even though, like you said, I do think a lot of it's empty gesture. But I would, you know, it would be cool. I hope if they make Terrifier 3 that like Sienna is the main character again, because I think she was cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. I liked her too. I just hope Terrifier 3 does that, like what I want, and meets in the middle and is like a hair under 2 hours, still delivers the disgusting nihilistic gore in spades, but like pays off on what it's setting up. Like, do you want to know more about her dad and what that meant? Do you care?
I wouldn't object to it, but I can't believe I didn't think of this when I was saying Fast and Furious or John Wick. Saw is really the analogy, right? Like, where you're like, oh, but there's more, you know? Where it's taking a very simple premise and trying to spin it out into like, oh, but there's this whole mythology or whatever. Do I care about hearing about that? I don't know. I wouldn't mind hearing some more like ridiculous mythology about why what happens in the mid credit scene can happen, or like more about the Victoria character, who is the journalist who is horrifically Victoria is the one who kills the journalist. She's the victim from the first movie,
right,
who comes back,
which they keep teasing as like she's going to be an antagonist, but like she doesn't factor in at all, really.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be sort of interested in that. She's like, you know, if you're going to do the Amanda slash Hoffman apprentice to the main creep, you know, I'd like be sort of interested to know more about the like little girl ghost who like Art the Clown can see, but no one else can. You know, all that stuff is like potentially interesting, but it also could all potentially become a bunch of dead ends or a bunch of just endlessly stringing stuff along. I do think some people like who maybe grew up with like Saw or whatever else, like don't get that how sequels actually don't have to be like these kind of endless 10 movie, you know, teases for more. Cause like I guess that's true of the Nightmare and Friday the 13th movies to some extent, but like, I don't think those were designed. I think those are sort of all designed to all be the last one if they had to be.
Like, yes.
They feel like there was more of an awareness there that like this could stop at any point. And I feel like now movies like that are like, well, we're assuming we're going to have at least three more. And you know, why wouldn't you assume that, I guess, because that's how these things go now. But I agree that it would be cool to see something in the middle for a next Terrifier where it has some of the actual story and character of this one, but maybe is not quite so eager to throw out story threads that are just plainly not going to be resolved.
And just
until
it's so unwieldy, even though I agree with you, like scene by scene, I'm like, this is fine. But I guess that dream sequence goes on too long and is like a cheat code of like, we can up our kill count by a bunch and have it be a bunch of children if we just do a dream sequence and have like,
yeah.
But I think that imagery pays off with what I wanted with like the school shooter stuff. But like that is, I feel like I'm putting the school shooter thread onto the movie more than the movie's giving me it. But like,
oh, for sure.
But
for
like,
sure.
I see it a little in there, and like, I want it to be impactful. I think it's really funny that scene, how like they're all supposed to be like young kids. They're like playing like probably like 5 year old children, but they're all teenagers because they probably just didn't want to like shoot a bunch of actual children. I'm glad. So ultimately, you are glad you rolled out for Terrifier 2, I think.
I am. I give it sort of a mild thumbs up as opposed to the mild thumbs down of the first one. And I'll probably see the second one the first weekend it comes out, you know, assuming they don't screen it for critics.
The third one?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, sure. The third one that I'm imagining.
Oh, for sure. For sure. All right. Well, this has been the second or third New Flesh episode on Terrifier 2, or 1, and the second episode on Terrifier 2. If you want to hear more about it and you haven't listened to the Joe Avella episode, that's also up. Check out the Patreon for fun stuff. And next week we'll be back with a double feature. And then the week after that, we'll be tackling the Hellraiser franchise, I think. Who knows? You never know with us. We keep you on your toes. All right. Bye.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Send in the clowns. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, one who can't move. Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Just when I'd stopped opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours, making my entrance again with my usual flair, sure of my lines. No one is there. Don't you love a farce? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Don't bother, they're here. Isn't it rich? Isn't it queer? Losing my timing this late in my career. Where are the clowns? There ought to be clowns. Well, maybe next
style.
You'll forgive me if I don't stay around to watch. I just can't cope with the freaky stuff.